What's up, you guys? FightfulSelect.com. It's retro review time. I've started to do these a little bit differently. Sometimes I'll release them early to $10 tier members, and then the $5 tier members get them essentially at the beginning of each month. But I don't know that anybody deserves to go through what we're about to go through. I'm going to hit you guys with a little inside baseball. Me and Warren Hayes joining me, by the way. Hi, Warren.
What's up, you fellows?
Yeah. So to match our schedules, we're filming two of these at a time. We're also filming World War III 1998 following this. It'll release. Maybe I'll release it in November, maybe December. Hell, I don't know. Got lots of stuff coming up, though. We're doing nothing but expanding. I didn't realize that Warren suggested both of these events sarcastically. You're a real son of a bitch of professional wrestling right now, Warren.
Well, okay. Since we're starting off with Survivor Series 1994 here, I just want to say, just want to make very, very clear, knowing your appreciation or lack thereof for the city of San Antonio, Texas, I really thought you'd pick up on it like that and that you just toss it out the window. But I did pitch, you know, it's like, oh, it's the breakup of the dudes with attitudes, you know, and but yeah, I guess this is why you hand out assignments, Sean and I.
Yeah. So the thing is, when I pick these, or I have somebody else pick these, I mean, you've been with me since I think about after the second one. I was like, you know what? I need another voice on this show. That way it's not monotonous. And I've done WWF Backlash 99. We did One Night Stand 06 with John Baez, SummerSlam 94, Hardcore Heaven 95, SummerSlam 2000. I did a Raw review in 2000 for with Alex Anderson. We did TNA Unbreakable 2005. So I was like, okay, 2 years that I haven't done anything on, 94, 98. Surprising too, because 98 especially was a big, big year in wrestling. And I let you pick those, and you're a real son of a bitch. Let's go ahead and get into it. And I will give you guys my match ratings as we go on. As always, I'm going to explain this because some people don't get it. I've had some people say, oh, well, because you rated it a 5 out of 10, that means it's a 2.5-star match. I don't know what a 2.5-star match is. I can't go on a Dave Meltzer scale or anybody else's scale. I can only go on what I've developed and what I've gotten used to over the last year. I start at a 5 out of 10, either slides up or slides down. If it gets up to a 6, that's recommended viewing. If it gets below a 5, it probably wasn't great, really boring, dead crowd, something like that. If it's below 4, I'm telling you to avoid it at all costs. 10 is virtually perfect. 8, excellent. 7, really great. 6, really good. But let's go ahead and get into this, Warren.
I'm excited to see how many 8s you're going to give out for this pay-per-view here.
Now, I have to admit, when this first match kicked off, I was pretty pumped. I was like, okay, Warren picked a good one. Razor Ramon, the 1-2-3 Kid, the British Bulldog, Sione, also known as the Barbarian, and Fatu, also known as the Sultan, and Rikishi. That's a hell of a team. That's a formidable team. That is 4 eventual Hall of Famers and the Barbarian who... You know, if he would have stayed still in one place, maybe he could have become a Hall of Famer, like from a tag team or something. And they face Diesel, Shawn Michaels, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Owen Hart, and Jeff Jarrett. That is a squad, Warren. Two squads.
Two very impressive squads. And you know, exactly like I said, you know, when I pitched the idea to you, that was the match that stood out, especially since it led into a huge storyline for WWE at the time. I thought, well, okay, there's definitely something here.
I was a Diesel fan as a child, too. You got to remember, I was maybe 9 years old as this happened. So, I mean, I'll look fondly back on that. Covering a little bit less as a journalist and more as just a reviewer. Because, I mean, I wasn't around back then covering wrestling media. And that's what I like about these retro reviews. I've said it before. You and I don't have to worry about what they're doing the next night on Raw.
Exactly.
And we don't have to be like, oh, they're going to push this guy, push that guy. But as an 8-year-old kid, now keep in mind, at this point, I hadn't taken a break. I just, quite frankly, was disallowed from watching wrestling. I wasn't allowed for years and years. And they were really pushing Diesel hard here. And for good reason. He would become WWF champion this week. So we are also actually going to review the Bob Backlund match, since why not? But I was a fan of Diesel. I thought that he was like the coolest dude. So when I read, it was in 1996 when this is following the billionaire Ted thing and all those skits, and they talk about how old all these wrestlers are, and Vince McMahon pops up in Raw magazine and he's like, well, Kevin's 37. And I go, what? He's what? Put him out to pasture, I said. 37? It is just wild, and I hate to date these, but we are in 2018 right now. As we film this, it's October. WWE is about to run DX versus the Brothers of Destruction. Warren, all four of those guys were on the roster when those billionaire Ted skits ran in 1996.
Weren't they in some of these skits as well? My memory fails
Vince
me a little
Russo
bit.
Was.
Yeah, you know, and that was the thing at the time, right? It's like, oh, the old guys, you know, we're done with the old guys. And look at what's happening here. The irony, honestly, is
now, let's be fair. The people that are working today, much better than the workers back then. Save maybe Randy Savage. Randy Savage was still very good. You had Bret Hart still performing at a high level, but they leaned in hard on Diesel on this show, and they should have.
Yes, but Bret wasn't old guard yet, you know, even though he was one of the guys who was part of the 80s or late 80s, you know, he was carried along with Shawn Michaels. Both still felt really, really fresh, despite having a few years under the belt and having been around at the Hogan era and so on and so forth. No, this was more like this was their time to shine.
That's the wild thing. We're smack dab in the middle of the new generation. Mm-hmm. And Bret Hart is on this show as a new generation guy, and God bless him for it. I mean, he's 37 at the time of this show.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and he had been in WWF for 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years. Shawn Michaels a little bit younger. He's in his 20s. But even then, Shawn Michaels at this point had been in the WWE or WWF for 6 years straight, essentially. It's pretty wild. Pretty wild to think. And I mean, it's cool. There are some good workers on this show. This opening match did not click for me, Warren.
No. But I mean, it was more of a story than a work rate match.
It was. So my favorite line of this is Gorilla Monsoon says, "It sounds like he's shedding." And Vince goes, "I beg your pardon?" Because it really sounds like he goes,
yes,
it sounds like he's shitting.
And then you kind of could go up to Gorilla after and say, what does shedding sound like? You know, what is the sound of shedding?
Huge 1-2-3 chants from the crowd. He is over right here, but he's also not on the same page with Anvil. But fortunately, you know how you get on the same page as Anvil in one of his matches?
Tell me, how do you get on the same page?
You run right into him and you fall down. That's it. That's how you reset. You sell the Anvil gimmick. Owen and Davey are in, and they trade a beautiful series. We have seen some terrible catapults in wrestling. This was not one of them. Davey Boy Owen or catapults Owen Hart's into the corner. It's an underrated spot to get a pop when you catapult the guy into the corner. And it seems like a dirty move, but it's such a pop. It's such a good babyface pop when you got four or five babyfaces wailing on one hated heel at the same time. Owen props up in that corner and just gets pummeled by all five of these guys, Warren. It was beautiful.
Everybody loved it. And it's also so very, very old school. And I mean, Owen was so despicable at the time as well. I mean, you know, he was right in the midst of his feud with Bret. I mean, it was a perfect spot.
Yes, it was. It was fantastic. I really enjoy how Davey Boy sells an enziguri by flipping. That is just a cool little thing. He takes out his Heart Foundation friendos with the double clothesline and then suplexes Neidhart. For some reason, Fatu, like, starts screwing about with his boot.
I know why.
Why?
because these are the new head shrinkers, right? Uh-huh. First of all, first and foremost, okay. this is the first time that the head shrinkers, or at least, you know, the Samoan SWAT team, the head shrinkers, first time that the team is composed with one member not being of the Anoa'i family,
yeah.
or even from the island of Samoa. For that fact, he's from Tonga, yeah. I think. So that's an interesting concept in and about itself. But when Fatu and Barbarian, I can't call him Samoa, I can't. When they got together, they were managed by Captain Lou Albano, who was in the process of civilizing them. One of the things that he wanted to do with them is to keep them from performing barefoot in the ring because it's not civilized.
Yeah, shit-eating wild men like Matt Riddle do that. Are you familiar with Lady Tapa?
No.
She wrestled in TNA for, about a year. She appeared on an episode of NXT, losing to Ember Moon. She was an alternate for the Mae Young Classic. She also competed in the world of MMA, losing to Gabby Garcia, a very roided up woman in Ryzen. Mm-hmm. She is, I believe, the Barbarian's niece. So, oh, I mean, really? that bloodline continues. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, that makes really a lot of sense. And it also makes a lot of sense because, as Gorilla Monsoon says, when your feet hurt, you lose your concentration.
And just think about it for a second, though, and we'll close up this sidebar, how this would never fly today.
Yes.
Just to have a fat white dude telling natives from some far off island to be civilized.
Yes.
That couldn't. And especially Lou Albano, as if he had civilization lessons to give anyone.
Yeah, I agree. So as a sufferer of plantar fasciitis, I can confirm that when your feet hurt, you lose concentration. Jarrett's doing everything he can to avoid Razor in this match. A lot of cheap heat, but when Ramon finally cracks him, it gets a big reaction. Jarrett takes a beating. Diesel tags in after he and HBK had both kind of intentionally stayed out, but Michaels especially. Diesel immediately jackknifes and pins Fatu. That was impressive.
Like, it was really cool.
I've seen him jackknife the Big Show, Giant, Paul White, sometimes with varying results. But, I mean, still, a 35-year-old Kevin Nash jackknifing Fatu is impressive. 1-2-3 Kid isn't much further off, even though he gets a little offense. And Nash pins him with 1 foot. What are friends for, right?
What are friends for, exactly. What's the point of having friends if you can't, you know, show your ultimate supremacy over them?
Yes. Did it look to you like Sione, the Barbarian, tried to deadweight Diesel?
It did. I actually took a note of it. It looked easier to pick up and jackknife Rikishi, Fatu, than it did Barbarian. He did seem to not put any momentum into it. He was in no mood of helping Kevin Nash here. Diesel, I'm sorry. Keep going with the contemporary names.
It didn't help. I mean, it didn't matter. Sione got powerbombed anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Bulldog comes in after Diesel and perhaps does it a little too fast after that run that Diesel had. Because as impressive as it was, Diesel just powerbombed three guys and beat them. So Diesel looks a little fatigued. Bulldog is not. I don't know that Bulldog's ever been fatigued in his life. The spot takes way too long to set up, but Diesel is tired and wants to tag out. And I think Bulldog got counted out.
Yep, that was the call.
But, I mean, they didn't do a good job in highlighting that. And HBK still won't tag in. I'm like, why? Why? He beat everybody.
That's one of the parts of that. That's part of the psychology that doesn't quite work out. It's like if your guy is running in and decimating everyone, why don't you just leave him do it? But, you know, maybe that was the point exactly here, you know?
Razor is the last one in. He has a tough time covering for the still green and tired Diesel, but Diesel does land a couple of nice big boots. Michaels accidentally super kicks Diesel. And at that point, if I'm on that team, I'm thinking 5-on-1, shit happens, whoops. And the group called the Teamsters try to stop it, and all of them get counted out. The entire team 5-on-1 gets counted out, Warren.
That didn't make sense because there had been a count out here. You know, Davey Boy got counted out. His team didn't lose. He was just eliminated. Technically, the referee, because they were brawling, not necessarily brawling, but Diesel was going after Michaels. They were walking all the way up to the ramp. Then Jarrett and Owen, they all come to try and get these guys back, but they're just walking off. So technically the referee should have counted, what, 5-10 counts?
Yeah.
And even at some point, you even hear Owen at some point when they're really up next to the entrance, you hear Owen in the camera saying, guys, we got to go back or we're going to lose. But it's like, there's five of you. Just one of you has to go back, you know?
That was stupid. So dumb.
It was.
I gave this match a 4.5 out of 10, and that hurt me because I liked, to a degree, everybody in this match. I liked at some point. So Michaels cuts this lame promo on his way to a limo saying, he's done with Diesel. I made Diesel. I made him. Well, it could have been better.
He called him a leech.
Yes. So just mere days later, Warren. Well, actually, I think it's best we wait to cover that a little bit later.
Sounds good. But they did a really good job. I mean, that was the point, right? It was to put Diesel over in this match. That was the story. He looked invincible, quite honestly. I mean, with the not only the speed with which he got rid of everyone, but like you mentioned, jackknifing Fatu. That's some impressive shit. And he did it really, really well, you know? So the story served its purpose. Breaking up him and Michaels. Everything fell into place on that perspective.
This was a 21-minute match. Fatu got eliminated at 13 and a half minutes. 1-2-3 Kid at 14 minutes. Sione at 14:44. Bulldog at 15:58. And then the entire team at 21:45. I'm not given times for the next one.
Why?
But the match went 16 excruciating minutes. Now, okay, there's something that I want to approach here. And this is just all my guess. Jerry Lawler, one of the most offensive personalities in pro wrestling history. I think he never hesitates to say anything, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean,
we're in agreement.
He never says midget about these people. That's something I've noticed, or at least in this storyline. I feel like Jerry Lawler probably has a connection with some of these wrestlers that he probably booked a lot. And probably somewhere along the line, one of them said to him, hey, we don't like that. I don't doubt that he has before or has since, but probably in the midst of this, somebody had said to him, don't do that. Don't do that. And I'm probably one of them. But either way, 2 out of 10. And that's generous. That's generous. This is the royal family against the clowns.
Clowns are us. Excuse me.
Clowns are us. God almighty. Cheesy, queasy, and sleazy. So the only one, there are a couple of the little people wrestlers that you will know. There's, of course, Dink, who was Tiger Jackson and was Claude Giroux. I mean, he's a Canadian. You know, I'm sure he's probably your neighbor because small.
He's on the $5 bill.
There you go. And then there's Richard Trogdon, who apparently was only 21 at this point. 21 years old. And he played Pink the Clown. Yes.
Oh, okay. I just looked him up. Oh, okay.
And he would wrestle on and off in WWF until like mid-1995, actually. And he would team with Dink and face Cheesy and Sleazy months after this on Action Zone. So they saw this match, and they said, you know what? We don't have enough of it. We need more.
But you know, when you say they, you mean WWE. Vince, right?
I mean everybody Vince. Involved.
I'm sure this feels to me like it's Vince McMahon who really, really enjoys this type of comedy. Like this,
oh, for sure.
He loves this. So now, of course, he's going to book it after.
I'm just going to say, Dink has one hell of a working punch, and I'm not joking. Dink's working punch is fantastic. And that I was impressed by that.
Well, I mean, I was impressed by Dink. I thought Dink had the best work rate of anyone in the match when he was I don't know if you wanted to actually do the blow by blow here, Sean.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna. There's a lot of blowing here.
Well, then let's go ahead.
I have taken to writing down quotes that I enjoy from this. And Vince goes, "Why would he name them Sleazy, Wheezy, and Cheesy?" And Gorilla goes, "I guess because it rhymes, Vince." Lawler selling how much he hates the Burger King hat was excellent. I can't remember if they had a Burger King sponsor at this point, but they should have. I know they did on and off in the mid-90s. But I wasn't able. I looked up the information, couldn't find it.
couldn't find it either. It felt organic because the crowd was chanting Burger King as well. Yeah. You know, it just felt really, really organic.
So that was about the only positive thing. The rest of this match is total horse shit. It's not funny. It's not good. All the little people run over Lawler. He's unhappy. The King gets his to do the same to Doink, but they all fall over. So Lawler holds the tights and beats Doink. But Lawler can only fight Doink. That's the rule. It's like mixed tag rules. So how can you even eliminate Doink in that case? Why don't they just leave? Because if you beat him, you eliminate yourself. I don't know. And the reality is, despite Doink and Lawler both being good workers, their part was total trash. The little people had the better showing. This is going to hit 1 out of 10 territory before they got involved. And Dink started working his ass off. He gets pinned, though. Mercifully, it was over.
And Dink at some point, he has some great offense in, and he hits a surprisingly tight brain buster on Sleazy, which yes. I sort of popped for because I was not expecting it.
So I will give times. Doink gets pinned at 10:36. Wink at 13. Pink at 14 and a half, Dink at 16. The Royal Family have a clean sweep. Who needs DX, the Hardy Boys, and CM Punk, right?
Well, you know, we can look at this match. You know, I delved a little more into it, you know, and I took decided to take it apart, give it some more insight, maybe take it from another angle. You know, German philosopher Nietzsche once said that he who fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. If you gaze long enough into the abyss also gazes into you. What the fuck are we doing here? This is the actual representation of the end of a great man, of Jerry Lawler, a shining idol from Memphis, a king, Sean, a king. His inability to cope with these unfavorable circumstances has made him enter a situation where he fights clowns without realizing he himself was the clown. It's a tragedy in the purest literal form. Oedipus Rex, Richard III, Jerry the King Lawler, Survivor Series 1994.
I love that people telling you to retire has picked up. So this was not Matt Bourne, by the way.
No.
This was, I think, Ray Apollo. Can't remember who the hell it was, but yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was Ray Apollo who took over the Doink character, and this happened in early 94. Was nowhere near as good of a worker as Matt Bourne.
No.
But that's the situation that they were in right there, and Matt Bourne owned, I mean, not literally, but he really, really used that Doink character much better, I thought. But
especially when they started the Doink character, you know, where he was the dark, creepy clown. You know, imagine if they had if they had imagined that at the onset of the Attitude Era, man, that would have been a whole other ball game.
Yeah, that could have been a lot of fun. And I mean, they brought him back here and there, but it was never quite the same.
It was always in the goofy, you know, family-friendly Doink. Yeah. It didn't work.
Bob Backlund with Owen Hart defeated Bret Hart with the British Bulldog in a submission match for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship. 35 minutes in, it was very clear WWE had a couple of motives here. Keep Bret Hart strong. Have Bob Backlund win. Have Diesel win the title. Have Diesel not beat Bret Hart for the title. Also, use the soundbite. George Foreman won the boxing championship at 45 years old, and now Bob Backlund has done it as well. And I think that's kind of cool. That I remember that was big news, that George Foreman at that age was a champion. And back then, they needed the positive publicity. This was not a great match. It went on very, very long. They really could have used another match on this show.
Oh, absolutely. Real match. Absolutely.
This was a 5-match show. Every match went at least 15 minutes. They did not need to, Warren.
Now, there's two matches they could have shortened here. They could have shortened this one and the comedy Survivor Series match. Honestly, it was what, like 15, 16 minutes? That could have benefited from being cut easily in half. This one just went really, really too long. But I have some thoughts about this, but I'll wait till we get to the end to give our overall thoughts on this match.
So Owen is out with Bob Backlund, Bulldog out with Bret Hart. Bret starts by brawling, then yanks Backlund over the top of a headlock. That was a cool spot. A lot of grappling going on. You could tell they were pacing for a long time. I thought they were going to go even longer, to be honest with you. Bret manages a nice belly-to-belly suplex. Lots of shots of the Hart family during this. This match, Warren, very clearly called in the ring.
Oh, for sure. I mean, especially since they're obviously playing it old school style, so there's no other reason there was no reason to map this out ahead of time. Clearly, they're going through the paces in the ring for sure.
Yeah, you could definitely tell that that's how everything was unfolding, and as these two probably should. Backlund does one of the worst goddamn swinging neck breakers I have ever seen in my life. Not something I expected from him. The crowd was making noise despite no big spots. The crowd was really excited about a figure four from Bret Hart. He follows up by posting Backlund and getting a back body drop. Backlund applies a sleeper, just what a 35-minute match needs. Davey Boy apparently gets a brain hemorrhage outside. He dives after Owen and hits his head on the stairs and is knocked out for like 20 minutes.
He's dead.
He's dead.
There was a moment he was for sure clinically dead, and no one came to check on him.
Nobody. What the hell, man? How is this okay? It's scary. It's horrifying. No. So Backlund applies a really good crossface chicken wing for 8 minutes.
I was about to say it had to be the best goddamn crossface chicken wing for the amount of time that it was locked in. It kind of took me out of it. It took me out of it at this point, because there was, I mean, I get the story, what they were building, but for 8 minutes, that was clearly overkill.
Unbelievable. 8 minutes. I'm serious. Six of those minutes. Three of the minutes that were given to the last match, and maybe probably honestly a minute or two of that Yokozuna match as well. You look at all the people who weren't on this show, like, or that could have done something. Well, I don't want to say weren't on this show. They didn't have a lot of people who weren't on this show. They could have shifted things around a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. This was not an outstanding, it was an above average match, I'll say that. Owen is begging for his parents to throw in the towel. Somehow the crowd is still into it, begging for Bret. They just didn't know any better. Bulldog is not awake 10 minutes later. This is coma territory.
Well, it's a San Antonio crowd, right?
They're used to it. Bret's mother throws in the towel and Owen runs off in joy. As I mentioned, Vince brought up several times the Foreman deal. Bob Backlund is your new champion at 45 years old. He cuts a loony promo backstage, and he is great at it.
Wasn't it fantastic? It was absolutely fantastic. Let me just jump down to the. I'm going to pasteurize you, homogenize you, and synchronize you into morality. It's called sports education. And it's the face, right? It's the craziness that he has in his eyes as he's delivering all of this. The tendons on his neck pulling back as he's delivering the promo. He was so good. Back in the day when I was haunting the RSPW boards over on Usenet, this was an extremely controversial match because there were some people who adored it, some people who hated it, but overall, most people didn't get it. The people who liked it were proponents of old school wrestling because this was built as such. It was built as a 1978 WWWF match more than anything else. And those who were more contemporary fans just didn't get it. They disliked it tremendously. And the controversial part here was that the one thing that no one really quite understood is, well, you have the new generation, where you have Brett, you have Diesel, you have Shawn Michaels, but then you have your old guy come in and win literally out of nowhere while we're getting bombarded with these, you know, the new generation, the new stars, trying to parry the fact that they lost Hogan, that they lost Savage, and so on. These are the new guys, but yes, the new guys are losing their titles to the old guys again. It was kind of weird. It would make sense in a couple of days, but at that point, it was a really, really strange match and was extremely divisive as well.
So I mentioned how this show needed something else, and you didn't have a lot of people on the roster at that point, period, much less that weren't on this show. You didn't. And I'll get to what I would add in a minute, but just a few days later, after this promo, Diesel beats Bob Backlund, and it's literally a kick, a powerbomb, a pin. That's it. Diesel is your new champion. Honestly, if that match were on this show, it might have been the second, third best match out of five or six. Diesel is your new champion, and it leads to a year-long run. Mm-hmm. And Diesel doesn't lose until the next Survivor Series, where he has a really good match with Bret Hart. One of the first of its kind in WWF, where people were going through tables and everything of that nature. But this show was an awful long way. It took an awful long time to set up what they needed to do, and they could have done it in less time. And I really think they could have. They wanted the title switch from Alundra Blaze to Bull Nakano to happen, not on this show. And Todd Pettengill interviews this fucking woman with this hat he has on. This dipshit is interviewing Bull Nakano, and he goes, "How do you feel as champion? Please speak English." And I'm like, man, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because now they've got like Asuka on WWE TV screaming in Japanese. They still treat these people like they're dumb. But they could, like, if I had my way, if I could go back and look at the roster, I would have probably ran Alundra Blaze versus Luna Vachon on this show, but I think Luna left right before the show. Like, she had her last match just a couple days before this show and never wrestled for WWF again until like 99. And Bull Nakano and Alundra Blaze were working together every night for like 6 months. So that could have been on here instead of this stupid promo. And the next year they kind of figured it out and they did a women's Survivor Series match. But what do you think of this Bull Nakano interview?
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you haven't seen this match, it's really easy to find on YouTube. When they mentioned it, I went out and I seeked it out and I found it, and it's actually a pretty good match. And
the Nakano Blaze match?
Yeah.
It was at the Tokyo Dome.
At the Egg Dome, yeah. And yeah. That's what they called it back then. Yeah. And it was actually really good. And Alundra Blaze comes out with a, there's like 12 motorcycles that come out with her. She has a hell of an entrance. And it, you look at it, even in the context of today, you look at how they're working, and this is perfectly serviceable these days as far as women wrestling goes. And there's an extreme dichotomy between how they presented Bull Nakano here, being very stone-faced and talking in Japanese and in a way we don't understand. Whereas when she goes to the ring and her All Japan at the All Japan show, she's all smiles. She's got this huge smile. She's waving at everyone. She accepts the flowers from the flower girl, and she turns to the audience, and it's a completely different persona. And yeah, like you said, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same. Right now they have, you know, Asuka and Naomi, you know, it's like, what'd you say? Yeah. Teriyaki? No, she didn't say teriyaki, you know? That, and so it was just strange.
That we know of, that is on record, Medusa and Bull Nakano wrestled 75 times between 94 and 96, including a loser smashes opponent's bike match at Hog Wild 96 in WCW. But here's one that I want to see. It's a dark match, and I hope it exists. I hope I can find it. Alundra Blaze and Bob Holly against Bull Nakano and Hakushi.
I've heard of that one.
That sounds like a hoot.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And you know, keep in mind too that at the time, as far as the women's roster went in WWF, there was Wendy Richter still there?
Oh, hell no. Wendy Richter.
She was gone, right?
Wendy Richter got screwed over like a decade before that.
She was there. I mean, there was no one. There was literally no one. What would they do as far as women?
Wendy Richter? She got screwed over in 85 and never wrestled there again.
Oh, okay. Excuse me, Mr. Encyclopedia.
Damn. Wendy Richter. Come on. I gave the Bret Hart Backlund match a 5.25 out of 10. I gave the Million Dollar Team defeating Lex Luger, the Smoking Guns, Adam Bomb, and Mabel with Mo a 3.5 out of 10.
I'd like to refer to this match as Mullet Palooza.
Oh yeah.
Luger, Billy Gunn, Bart Gunn, the Heavenly Bodies, and Tatanka to a certain extent as well. That's a lot of guys. That's a lot of hockey hair, dude.
They go 23 minutes. Tom Pritchard gets beat in about 4 minutes by a Mabel splash.
I love how Vince at some point, you know, sometimes Vince is quite on point with his legendary commentary. And at some point he's like, Lex Luger is beating everyone up and Pritchard comes in to take him out. And Vince goes, a heavenly body comes in. And then Del Rey comes in to help him out. And he says, and another heavenly body comes in. Yeah. He can't even tail them apart.
Million Dollar Corporation was like a collection of guys who had value at any given point of their careers, but none at this point, really. And it just wasn't good. This wasn't good. I saw Lawler bulldog Tatanka and then throw Jimmy Del Rey, and it reminded me of why he should just clothesline people. And when Mabel falls down, Pritchard jumps all over him. Unfortunately, he's pinned when Mabel jumps over him jumps onto him from the second rope. Del Rey runs into a nice falling sidewalk slam. Bundy gets shoulder blocked and knocked down. These spots used to be just really easy heat, like the running into each other, King Kong Bundy and Mabel, all that stuff. But Mabel gets slammed off the top rope by Bam Bam, but sits on him during a sunset flip attempt. I am not sure why he would not go for a pin there, but he didn't. Instead, he almost kills himself and Bam Bam with a clothesline over the top. This gets Mabel counted out in about 7 minutes. Adam Bomb is gone like 15 seconds later, about a minute later. I could see why WWE thought he would be something. He's got a little bit of something, but he got pinned with a Bam Bam moonsault. We've seen a little bit of Adam Bomb between our shows and Wrath and all that. I mean, he got some chances. He just didn't pan out.
And I kind of wonder why, though. You know, maybe we'll have another chance to discuss this on a future retro pay-per-view that is coming up soon. But
Chronic
was over. And as far as a big guy went, like, he had the look and he had the mobility. He had charisma. It's not like he looked like dead weight in the ring. His mic work was never all that stellar, but I mean, at some point, you know, you can, there's ways to work around that. Brian Clark's career, wrestling career, is going to be a bit of a mystery to me, how it didn't boil over more than it did.
Both he and Brian Adams, it's so crazy they ended up being together and actually getting over as a team together because they both had so many different opportunities. You had Adam Bomb, you had Wrath, they didn't work. There were a lot of things that they tried out with both of these guys, and Wrath evolved from the Blood Runs Cold thing to what he was in WCW, and where he just essentially kind of worked as himself, and then he teamed up with Brian Adams. But Brian Adams had like six gimmicks, and some of them worked. But Luger flies through, clotheslines Del Rey for a pin. This leads to the Smoking Guns double teaming Tatanka with their mullets. Tatanka hits one of the worst end of the trails. It's a Samoan drop I've ever seen to pin Bart. Jimmy Del Rey got out at about 10 minutes. Bart out at about 13 and a half. Billy follows at 16 minutes. And my next note was, why did Warren pick this show? Tatanka looks exhausted, and this is the total shits. Bundy pins Billy Gunn, and it's down to Lex.
And to his credit, though, Tatanka worked most of the heel faction's beatdown. And it was actually really interesting then the way they structured it, because the baby faces were in control for most of this match. They got most of the offense in, and Tatanka was on the receiving end. So when
a 10 person match, 23 minutes, he should not be exhausted. And he was exhausted by like 18, and he was in and out. He got his breathers.
That's probably because of his shorts. I don't know if you noticed how small his shorts were, how tight short they were. There was this one spot where Bart Gunn flips him out of the corner, and the camera angle sort of has him like right, has a stare right into his crotchal area. And there was just like a very thin strip of black tights there. And I think from that point on, I think I'm going to call him Tatanka.
Oh, God. So Billy Gunn got pinned, and that leaves it to Lex. He valiantly fights everybody off. Then he gets beat up for 7.5 minutes. Huh? Okay. He pins Tatanka with a small package. Then anticlimactically gets squished by Bundy. Bigelow and Bundy win. 23 minutes, 14 seconds was when Tatanka got pinned. And then just 7 seconds later, Luger had got pinned. Man, they gave up on Lex Luger. They had given up on Lex Luger, and they had not yet started the build for Bam Bam Bigelow, because Bam Bam Bigelow should, all things considered, rearview mirror, should have gotten the pin because he headlined WrestleMania a few months later. This was terrible. 3.5 out of 10.
But, you know, King Kong Bundy, man. King Kong Bundy. When I was a kid in the 80s, Bundy, but I have very fond memories of Bundy and Hogan's feud, because he just looked like a nasty cartoon villain, you know, the big guy, the big eyes, the expressions that he pulled. And he was with Jimmy Hart, right? And you know, everybody hated Jimmy Hart.
He was one of the first guys to ever headline WrestleMania in his 20s.
There you go.
King Kong Bundy. He was like 20, 28, 29 when he was in the cage with Hogan.
So, you know, there's some sense to this.
That was 10 years before. That was the Wendy Richter era too.
Right. She wasn't around anymore.
Casket match, Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeated Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and James E. Cornette. Special enforcer, Chuck Norris.
No, not special enforcer. Troubleshooting ref. Oh,
okay. Hold on. Let me.
That's very important. And I'm
add that to my notes.
Troubleshooting guest referee Chuck Norris, and I'm wondering what's the troubleshooting? Is he going to perform logical and systematic searches for the source of a problem? What is he going to do exactly? But it ultimately just turns out he's a bloody bouncer, is what he is.
He was a big TV star back then too. I mean, Walker Texas Ranger was legit back then. He was in movies often, so I mean, he was a pretty decent star for them to have. It's wild to hear them at Survivor Series reference things from the Royal Rumble 11 months prior, because that doesn't happen today.
Mm-hmm.
WWE isn't bringing up what happened at the Royal Rumble now, mm-hmm. like period. Yokozuna was so good here. As corny as this all was, Yokozuna was great. He fell down when Taker does the throat slash, like he was scared and freaks out over the casket. He was perfect for this era, Warren. I gave this match a 5.75, and a lot of it was Yokozuna's mannerisms.
Yeah, I mean, and what was really cool about this match, as I remember watching it here, is that Undertaker had just returned from resting up an injury, one of his numerous self-imposed exiles for injury purposes. And this was Undertaker's whole thing, right? He was still very much the dead man. He was still considered as, you know, a zombie, you know, even though they never really used that term. So just the fact that Yokozuna, this huge guy, dominant, he'd be just terrified at the sight of him, regardless, seeing the casket, you know, being faced with his own mortality here. I'm telling you, Sean, there's layers to Survivor Series 1994 here that I don't think you fully appreciate. Maybe I should write a 10,000 word dissertation for Fightful.
You should, because I wrote 1,500 words on this piece of shit, and it will be up on Fightful. I mean, it's already up for Fightful Select members, I believe. If not, it will be soon. Whew! Tatanka should have taken notes on how to do a Samoan drop from Yokozuna. Right. He does it perfect right after old school. That Uranagi that he did was just so good. That family can do Uranagis. Him and The Rock, great. They fought it out in a casket. Fuji grabs Taker's hair. I wish Taker would have cracked Fuji like he did Cornette, because Fuji was a piece of shit. Taker flies from the top rope with a wild but cool-looking clothesline on Yoko.
I just want to point out something. Sorry, you mentioning Cornette. You know how he hates goofy things in wrestling, right? You know how he despises the comedy and the over-the-top stuff? When they zoomed into his face, when he had been knocked down to the mat, he was literally like this. Yeah, that's the kind of gift then that I would gladly retweet to him lovingly, because I like his podcast. I find him entertaining for what he's worth, but I'd gladly toss that out to him next time he starts calling out people on goofy shit.
King Kong Bundy comes out and the focus is on Chuck Norris. The crowd gets wild waiting for this. The focus is on them. Bam Bam Bigelow follows and IRS hits the ring while Norris is distracted. IRS is fought off, but Yokozuna is still afraid of closing the lid. He plays up his fear of this casket so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, after everybody that shows up, Jeff Jarrett does and gets kicked. And then he hits the bricks. He's like, oh, bye. The crowd goes nuts for it. Good spot. But I think maybe you shouldn't have had everybody else come out. I know it's playing off the Royal Rumble. It's playing off of when all those people came out. But man, Chuck Norris looked like a bitch not doing his job, right?
Well, I mean, he did keep Bigelow and, you know, he did keep two guys back, which were clearly a distraction.
That is fair. I just think that violence is the answer.
Oh, well, there you go. And I'm Canadian, so we like to sit around and we'll smoke pot these days. I thought the finish was a little like, this is literally WWE having an opportunity, seeing, oh wait, we're going to Texas and Chuck Norris is there. Can we get him on? They're literally shoehorning him into this because he really didn't serve any purpose to the match. It was a little overbooked. The run in by IRS was not necessary, or could have been done by Fuji or Cornette as well. You know what I mean? There wasn't really any purpose to him other than the fact that, as usual, they get a little extra mainstream attention, and
they probably needed it at that point. I mean, middle of the trial, or I think it was following the trial, and you got a 5-match show. You didn't have hardly any stars. I mean, you are starless on this show, because think about it. Lex Luger, they gave up on him. Bret Hart was losing the title to a 45-year-old. They were developing Diesel. So, I mean, you really needed some star power on this show. A big clothesline and a running DDT finishes it off for Taker. He wins and then breaks the Japanese flag over his knee. Wow. I don't know if you saw a few weeks ago. When I witnessed this, I went, wow. Also, Undertaker awkwardly did this where he threw his knee up in the air, then brought, that's not how you do it. I am a veteran of like breaking things over my knee.
Are you now?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And he brings his knee up, then does it. Like he brings his knee all the way up, then brings the stick down across. That's not how you do it. You do it at the same time. It's the motion of the stick, the motion of your knee colliding. However, it did break. So, eh. But I posted that and I said, this is what angry WWE fans think when people are tweeting about New Japan. So that was this show. It was not a good show. Everything went too long almost. Almost everything went way too long and didn't have the exciting work that it needed. Oh, but man, we're spoiled today.
But if you're looking into exploring different facets of the human condition and how things evolve, you know, as far as your identity, you know, as with Jerry Lawler within his match with the Clowns or Yokozuna faced with his own mortality, then please go ahead and watch.
Let's talk about the aftermath of some of these people. The first match would be used essentially to build to your WrestleMania main event, kind of. Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow headlined WrestleMania, but the WWF Championship match would be Shawn Michaels against Diesel. Shawn Michaels would go on and win the Royal Rumble via nefarious methods, not really, but just win the Royal Rumble just a couple months later. Razor Ramon, who was the sole survivor, would get beaten by Jeff Jarrett just a couple months later for the title. Undertaker's push would continue as he faced IRS at the Royal Rumble. Bret Hart would get his rematch and fight Diesel to a draw. I think the right call. That's a way you keep both guys strong. 1-2-3 Kid would end up teaming with Bob Holly to take on the million-dollar team of Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka for the and have a short tag title run. And a lot of the people were in, like, you had Lex Luger, again, nothing, a year after winning the Royal Rumble. He eliminates four people and had a nice showing, but was out in about 20 minutes. This was a real, real rough era for stars, and they didn't have a lot that they were building to, Warren. You see WrestleMania 11, and one of the matches had to get pulled, so this show looks a lot better than it does in retrospect, but WrestleMania, 7-match show, and one of those matches was Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
It was rough.
It was a tough time for them, you know, and I think, I think Vince learned a really important lesson here as far as, you know, building stars did. You know, you sort of have to keep in mind that, you know, the WWE was always about, you know, the big star, the championship, the world championship, and that world champion would mostly be a baby face. Like Bruno held it for like, God, the entirety of his life, it feels.
Yeah.
You know, and then Hogan had that super long run. Iron Sheik held the belt. He won it from Backlund, held it for 4 weeks, something like that. 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I mean, I think Vince really, really understood how, started to see how things were going and was trying to make up for lost time. Because again, you know, you were talking about guys, what happened to them afterwards. You know, Billy Gunn is here in his first tag team. And here's a guy who was going to have immeasurable amounts of success as a tag guy in multiple tag teams across the board. But again, you know, he'd be saddled as the smoking guns for a while, at least until the Attitude Era.
So it's funny. I had mentioned, why didn't Bam Bam get the push? Or why didn't Bam Bam get the pin? Because clearly they didn't know what was in store for him. I get the feeling they knew what was in store for Bundy. Bundy, after this, would go on a streak. He would crush, I think, 8-9 jobbers in a row throughout November, December, January. He beat Mabel in an over-the-top rope match the night after the Royal Rumble. He and IRS and Tatanka beat Lex Luger and Men on a Mission on TV. Then he would just return to beating jobbers over and over. He worked Diesel a couple times on house shows. But on TV, King Kong Bundy was winning. And I mean all the time. I think the only time he lost leading into WrestleMania was Lex Luger via DQ. He even won some handicap matches on TV. They were putting King Kong Bundy over strong. Why? Because he had to put over The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And that was a priority for them mm-hmm. because The Undertaker was a star. That was one of their guys. That was one of their key cogs in that machine. And then immediately after WrestleMania, King Kong Bundy's back to losing to Adam Bomb on the house show loop and then would wrap up his run later that year. Was never a priority again. So your point to why King Kong Bundy was put over, I think a good one. What are your lasting memories of this show going to be? For me, I liked it when you brought up the Dudes with Attitudes breakup because I never associated that with this show. And there's a lot of these shows I've never seen before. But in my memory, the two things I would remember were Chuck Norris when I was a kid and then Bob Backlund. And then what happened to Bob Backlund days later?
For sure. I mean, there's... I think like as a point in time, this has a certain amount of significance because it's really like it's a turning point for a lot of storylines and advancement as far as WWE goes. And, I tried to glean some meaning out of what happened to Jerry Lawler in that match. But of course, you guys know I'm all full of shit on that one. It's just, there wasn't a lot of good in this pay-per-view. I don't think we'd go as far as to say recommended viewing, but if you want to see the state that WWE was in at the time and how remarkable then their return to prominence is when this is one of its most sour points, it's pretty impressive. And you have to give respect to WWE Vince and all his team to have really turned stuff around the way they did.
Yeah, I know we're going to plan on doing some Royal Rumble stuff, and I did an alternate commentary with a guy who Fightful fans will know as, or Fightful viewers will know as, Nikita Krylov fan, and we did a live alternate commentary of the 95 Rumble. Because it was like, okay, 60-second intervals, we can bang this out pretty quick. It was a sad state of affairs. It was rough, man. It was bad. And we're going to do a couple Royal Rumble shows, which we haven't decided on yet. We're going to do a couple of those for Royal Rumble season. Probably I might run two that month because I am a Rumble fan. I am a sucker for them, even though they're terrible usually.
It's the drama. It's a lot of fun. And everyone watching right now, notice that Sean said we haven't decided on which ones to do, but rest assured, Sean is going
to. Oh, you're damn right. I'm going to pick good ones. I'm going to pick fun ones. I don't like covering these and it being shit. Follow Warren on Twitter. He is at what, Mr. Warren Hayes?
It's just as simple as that.
I am at Sean Ross Sapp. Let people know that you like this show and let us know what you liked and didn't like about Survivor Series 1994. That's part of the beauty of this, guys. I want to know what you thought of this show. I want your reviews of this show. I want you in the comments. I want you on Twitter saying what you did and didn't like. Share what did you think of our criticisms? What did you think was fair and unfair? Till next time, guys. We're out.